I remember saying to the surgeon, is she going to be all right? And he just basically said, well, look, the next 24 hours, it's going to be 50-50. So just don't go far. They're going to pick the best egg and the best sperm. And what can go wrong? How can it fail? Technology's come on leaps and bounds. So why shouldn't it work?
You belong in the community. And that's important for anyone to hear. It's not like a race to the bottom, like of who's got the shittest sperm. Every bloke is going through this, like sex on demand and the pressures have come. It doesn't matter what brings you here.
Welcome to the Male Fertility Podcast. Today we are joined by another incredible member of the Nexus community, and that is Jack Silverside. How are you doing, buddy?
Yeah, very well, thank you, man. Very well. It's an absolute pleasure to be on here with you guys. I've been following you from the day one of the podcast, and I really feel privileged to be invited on.
Yeah, very well. Privilege is all ours, Jack. Thank you for coming.
Yeah, thanks for being on, mate. And obviously, I've been talking to you for a while, getting to know you, and I know that this is going to be an incredible conversation that our listeners are going to get so much from. I think we go right back to the beginning. Your story, your journey. I put the J word in there early.
Yeah.
I've already done it. I've jumped straight in. Sean's looking at me. Your journey's got multiple levels. It hasn't been straightforward. You are still in the mix of things.
Yeah, so probably back in 2021, me and my wife Becca decided to get the wheels going with trying for a baby. We'd not long come back from Mexico, so we had to give it a sort of period of time before we could start. We had some tests because things weren't really going properly to start off with. There was no results for the first few months, and naively we thought, why not? She's come off the pill. We thought it should happen easy. So we decided to go for the sort of basic tests at Bourne, and everything come back clear, apart from the only minor hiccup was that I missed, so the part of the sample missed the pot. So they said, oh yeah, because of the results, it was certain low. And I went, was it because I'd missed the pot? They said, yeah, probably. So then redone another sample, managed to get it all in this time. And yeah.
Pots are quite small, to be fair.
Oh, it was. And I think it was falling. I was all in a fluster, that pressure of getting it in and all that. And so, yeah, that was a bit embarrassing to start with.
Yeah, we're out trying to go on a tangent, but any idiot that calls it the easy bit, they just have never walked that path and never stepped into that room because the pressure is there's nothing I've ever experienced.
Yeah, I know. That's what I said. She goes, you had one job to do. Well, you've never had a problem doing it before. And I was like, I know, I've never had to try and name it into a pot before. So
I'm sat here thinking, at least she got the lid off, like. It's a story for another day, but so you've come out of your sample that's missed a bit, and then you've had another go.
Going back, because they said, oh, it's a bit low and all this, mainly because it missed the pot. I also thought maybe it's lifestyle. So then I decided that back then to go, let's give up all the booze. I started taking male fertility supplements. I started taking them daily. Yeah, give up the drink and everything. It was going to family do's and functions and weddings where normally I'd be drinking and celebrating everyone. And I'm there with the non-alcoholic beers and taking my supplements, even while I'm sitting at the table in this wedding. So yeah, it's doing that. And then, yeah, I'd say March 2022, my wife got a positive pregnancy test, which was an elation to us. It's fantastic news. So then we started getting excited. And I remember she downloaded the app where you could follow what size it is at certain weeks and things like that. And then you get all that excitement of planning. And yeah, I think everything was going well. We booked a 7-week scan because we thought we'd get a nice early scan just to try and get everything checked to make sure everything's going the way it should. And then it was April the 30th, a day that sticks with every day, every year that it comes around. It's like not even an anniversary, but it is that as it approaches. It was a Saturday evening. We was getting ready to go out with friends for a meal, an exciting one, because this was when we was going to tell our friends, our closest friends, that, hey guys, we've got some great news. We're pregnant. And I was in the bedroom with my wife. Oh, Becca, she was in the shower, and she came out of the shower and she was just holding her abdomen and she was just in crippling pain. She said, my stomach's really hurting. And she's quite a tough one. She's got real strong pain threshold normally. But to see her like that, I thought, she's not right here. And didn't know what it was. So she was like, oh, look, I'll just take a couple of paracetamol and see if it passes. have seen her, I didn't touch the sides. She was literally wincing on the bed, like in pain. And I thought, no, this ain't right. We've got to do something. So called 111, explained to them what we was experiencing, told them that Becca was pregnant. And they just said, you need to get down to A&E. So again, this is panic starts to set in. So I managed to get her into the car. She's, like I say, holding her stomach the whole time. Drove to the hospital, which luckily wasn't too far away. It's probably about 20 minutes. Parked up. As we was walking towards A&E, she said, oh, I feel faint. So I carried her in to the A&E reception. She sat down, went up to the receptionist, told her what's happening. Next thing I know, she's being sick. So then they've seen this and took her to one of the side rooms, and she was still being sick. And then they put a blood pressure thing on her arm. And this is the first moment I knew that something was really seriously wrong. Before I knew it, this blood pressure machine started beeping, and the nurse straight away, I could see in her face, the panic set in. Her blood pressure dropped so low that she was almost passing out. So before I knew it, she was taken off into triage, laid on a bed, and there was a whole hive of activity going on around her. There was nurses and doctors. They was putting in lines into insurance lines, taking blood samples. It was one moment everything was normal. The next minute it was all like panic stations and all hell broke loose. Before I knew it, she was rigged up with all these tubes and sensors. And I remember the doctor said, she's probably going to go and need some surgery. We feel like she's had an ectopic, could possibly have ruptured. And at the time, I didn't even know what this word meant, ectopic, and I didn't know. So he said to me, look, go and sit in the family room and we'll come back to you with some, once we know exactly what's going on. And I am sitting in this family room. At this time as well, I rung her mum, who was a midwife, and I just thought, need someone who's got a bit of understanding, because they was talking all this stuff and I didn't know what they were talking about, all these words and things. So yeah, I rang mum and dad, come down shortly after. And again, even on the phone, when I was explaining to her mum what had happened, her mum said, oh, it's not an ectopic. And again, at the time, I said, what's an ectopic? What is this? What is going on? And yeah, I was sitting in that family room and it just felt like an eternity, waiting for someone to come and tell me what was going on. And the whole time I could hear all the commotion going on outside. I can almost hear like a name being mentioned. And then all of a sudden, I distinctly remember it, hearing the doctor say, look, we're going to need some more blood. And I just thought, well, can someone just please come and tell me what's going on? And eventually, like I say, the doctor came in and yeah, confirmed what he'd have thought. He said, yeah, she's had an ectopic and it had ruptured and she had suffered from internal bleeding and they had to do emergency surgery. They had to open up her abdomen to stem the bleeding and shut it all down like that. And they said, look, she's still in surgery at the moment, but stay close by. She's going to really get this sorted out. And I just remember going, is she going to be all right? Because you always think once you're in hospital, everyone can be fixed kind of thing. It's all good. And I remember saying to the surgeon or doctor, yeah, is she going to be all right? And he just basically said, well, look, the next 24 hours, it's going to be 50-50. So just don't go far. And I just remember hearing that thinking, 50-50. So that means there's a chance that she could like actually die from this. And that just hit me. And it just went numb after that. And I was just sitting in his family room. Her mum and dad eventually come in and they were there to help me just process what they were doing. Because again, I was coming with all these sort of medical terminologies and I wasn't really sure what they were talking about. But because my mother-in-law had a background of midwifery, she was able to understand and relate to me what they was explaining and talking about and things like that. And yeah, it was just that feeling of sitting in that waiting room, family room, just not knowing. And they said at one point, they said, look, you can pretty much go back home if you want. There's not much you can do here. We'll call you as soon as we know any more. But I mean, you just think, I don't want to leave. She's in this hospital somewhere and I'm so helpless that I can't do anything. I don't know what state she's in or anything like that. Eventually a consultant came in and again, she said, yep, it was very serious. We had to perform this emergency surgery. They actually had to resuscitate her twice on the operating table during the operation because she'd lost that much blood. And she said to me, you're lucky that when you brought her down when you did, because had it been half hour later, things could have been very different because of how much blood she'd lost. And yeah, when they said to me that they had to resuscitate her twice on the operating table, that just I think that's when the realization hit me of what seriousness this was and how close it came. And also the uncertainty still, because they were still saying, look, it could be 50-50, so stay close by. And I remember the hours went by and we were just sitting there, and again, it's just that feeling of helplessness, knowing that she's in one of these rooms somewhere and there's nothing I can do. And yeah, it was shitty, to be honest with you. And then eventually they come in and said, look, she's out of surgery now. She's in recovery. You can go home now and we'll call you as soon as we know more. And again, I didn't want to go home, but her mum and dad were saying, look, there's nothing we can do. Look, let's just head back. Let's clear our heads a bit and wait for when they call us. And I thought, okay, so she's in recovery. That means she's got through the worst of it. She's in the stage where she's hopefully, yeah, as it says, in recovery. So yeah, headed home. And again, even at home, I just in tears. And I remember holding a picture of her. We had a picture of me and her on our fridge. And I know it sounds silly, but I just remember holding that picture and just looking at her as if to say, I can't lose you, can't lose you. And then, yeah, I remember had my phone by me. It was constantly making sure I had signal, that it was full battery. And then literally as soon as a number rung, I answered it within seconds. And it was, I'll never forget, it was one of the nastiest voices I've ever heard. It was one of the nurses to say, hi, Mr. Suicide, just to let you know, yeah, Becca's conscious now. She's doing recovery, but she's conscious. She's doing well. And I could actually hear her voice in the background. And just to hear her voice talking to the doctors, that feeling, it was just incredible. Just to know that she's still there, that she's still with us and hearing her voice. And they said, yeah, look, give it till opening visiting hours and you can come down and see her. I remember that morning, as soon as they'd let me in, all the rules and that, they were a bit funny about letting people in still. So as soon as I was able to get down there, I went straight down there. And yeah, she was in a ward on her own. But even then, I remember walking in the ward and she's just laying in the bed. She's conscious at the stage, smiling, but she had all these tubes and everything, all these lines where they'd put in. And I remember this one that was in her neck and it had five different tubes coming out of it. And I remember saying, what's the one in her neck for? And they said, it's the quickest route into your heart if we need to put any lines in and things like that. And just even just seeing her in that state was just shocking. It was, yeah, just unbelievable.
Wow. Even hearing that, and obviously we're hearing it live, but anyone who listens to this down the line will feel that. And you lived it, you and Becca, and that's just scary. And I have to say, there's absolutely nothing silly about going home and holding a picture of her. Oh. Absolutely not. Like, just, yeah,
just wow. That feeling of holding on to that hope and yeah. Anything, because that just felt, that feeling of helplessness and not seeing her. Because one minute it was like everything was fine. I was getting ready to go out for a meal that evening, and then next minute she's in that situation. So by holding on to that photo, it was the only way of holding on to that, knowing that she's still there, if you like. It's funny, but it's at the time it's what I felt was making me feel closer to her, because I couldn't see her. I didn't know where she was in the hospital or things like that. So having that photo was the only way to feel close to her.
It must have been, just like Sean's just said, listening to it now. It's a tough thing to go through, incredibly tough. But it's important to highlight here just how amazing our NHS is as well.
Absolutely.
It's moments like that, I definitely feel very privileged they're there when we do need them in those emergency situations. But yeah, man, incredibly tough. Thanks for sharing that, because you could have told that very briefly, but actually what you've done is really shown exactly what that experience meant to you. And as Sean said, there's definitely nothing silly about holding that photo. I think I would have done a very similar thing and felt very, you just want to be close to them. Like you said, it's out of your control. And she was in a hospital somewhere that you didn't know. You could hear things going on.
Yeah.
They're using language you don't know what it means.
Like
this is almost a side of fertility that isn't spoken about much, and it really does go wrong, that kind of pure panic. And thanks for sharing it, mate.
I remember as well at the time thinking, like, because they said to me as well, oh, did you know she was pregnant? And I was like, yeah, I knew she was pregnant. And at the time she'd had a miscarriage that has been a really bad one, and that's what I thought was, I thought, well, okay, so we've lost the baby. But it didn't even enter my head that the idea that we're going to be losing her as well. But at the time, and naively, I just thought, she's had a miscarriage and we've lost the baby. But the thought that we'd actually lose her as well, because obviously they had to remove the tube as well as repairing the internal bleeding. But yeah, it was that thought that not only had we had this miscarriage, but it's also almost cost her life as well. So she was in hospital for that week, and then she came home for 2 days and recovering, and then ended up being back in hospital because her bowel had closed up due to the surgery. So she had to have another week in hospital and with a tube through her nose, and they wouldn't let her out of hospital until she'd gone to the toilet once her bowel was closed. Not only has she gone through that initial thing with the ectopic rupture, then this recovery and surgery, then she's then back in with a seized bowel as well, and having to go through all that again. So she really went through it, the poor girl.
Yeah, man. Essentially, both did, mate. Like, she's gone through it physically, but emotionally, like, I can only imagine, like, how hard it was for you. So, this is obviously, it's almost a life-changing event, isn't it, this? Because you realise fragile life really is. What does the decision look like to move forward in terms of we're going to try again? What conversations did you have? Because you would have wanted to safeguard yourself from that happening again, even though you can't really truly do that. Like, how did you make that decision to move forward and try again?
So one of the things that we were told after everything had happened was that, look, even though she's had one of her tubes removed, there's no reason why she shouldn't be able to fall pregnant again. That the ovaries were still there. They didn't have to remove anything else. So we were told that, but we thought we needed to give it at least a year or so for her to recover, if you like. And like I say, have that bravery built up again. Because again, now knowing how easy things can change and realising that pregnancy isn't just something straightforward, it was building up that confidence to want to try again. Because every time we thought we're going to go again, is it going to happen again? Is it going to happen to the other side? And it took a while for us to make that decision to, let's try again. Again, she went for some follow-up tests and, everything was fine and everything was no issue. So we decided to try again and everything was going okay. And then I think it was June 2023, so almost a year later, just over a year later, she again had a positive pregnancy. And again, we thought, fantastic news. Spread the photo to close family, just saying, look, got the pregnancy, positive pregnancy. And I think it was about 3 days later, she started bleeding and miscarried again. And we was like, you're joking. And so we went to see the GP to find out why, what was this? And it turned out to be a chemical pregnancy, which again was something I'd never heard of before. But since that and looking into it now, understanding what that is and and realising, great, no one hasn't worked that out, but at least this, well, it sounds sad, but at least this one hasn't cost the life in a sense. But it's, again, what's a chemical pregnancy? And trying to understand what that was and realising that, that one hasn't worked. After everything else that had happened, and you think, what's going on?
And what, were you given any explanation or anything like that?
No, it's literally just comes down to sort of nature and that. There wasn't any rhyme or reason why it was. Again, not saying she'd had sort of the basic sort of tests and everything seemed to be fine from a perspective like that. There was no reason why, it was just one of those things that could happen, like any other miscarriage. But it was just that thing of, you get that positive test, you think, fantastic, this, things are obviously working and that. And then to get that negative miscarriage two or three days later, it's just, the hell?
Mate, really tough. And it's a testament to yours and Becca's strength that you, firstly, were able to pick yourself up after that first time, that horrendous experience. Like Kieran said, it is life-changing. And things like that do leave a mark, like you said, April the 30th, every single year.
Every year that comes around, we make a note of it. Like, not, we certainly don't celebrate, but we certainly count ourselves lucky that it turned out right in the end, because, it's certainly a day that changed our lives back then.
So, like, now after this chemical pregnancy, were you referred on for any other tests or given any advice about what to do next?
No, not really, if I'm honest with you. I think, again, a bit of naivety. We just thought, we thought we'd had these tests and everything seemed to be okay. I think this is when we started to get in the realms of Bourne and getting on their list and things like that. So we just thought, there's everything seems to be okay. There's no reason why we just can't try again. I think it was just that sort of anxiousness and that worrying if it's going to happen again, but we thought we've got to keep going at it. After a while, we just thought, look, neither of us are getting any younger, kind of thing. And it's been well over a year now since what happened. They weren't getting any results from trying naturally. So I think that's when we decided to maybe we need to look down the IVF route, because again, mainly think age and things like that and time's against us. Like I said, when we got in touch with Bourne and when we decided to go for the first round, we had the initial tests, the basic ones you get. And again, everything come back as fine. I think it was, when was it? Near the end of 2023, when we started our first cycle with Bourne. And yeah, doing the injections and things like that and getting ourselves prepped. And again, that was a whole new experience for us. Just seeing, having to see Becca doing all them injections and everything she had to go. Because again, it's that feeling of helplessness again. For us blokes, what do? We just got one job to do.
In relation to that job, when you were now in a specialist fertility clinic, were you tested yourself?
Yeah, so I had the sort of what you call a basic test, so the morphology, the mobility and the amount, and they all come back within the categories that are acceptable. So again, we wasn't thinking that it was any issue. In the naivety, you always think, oh, if there's an issue, it's got to be on the woman's side. Because again, I thought everything on my side, the basic ones have all come back okay. And so you just think, okay, there's no reason why it shouldn't work. And like I say, Becca's test come back fine, my one's come back fine. So we just, thought, let's give it a go and this will should hopefully do the job. So end of November, 23, we went through the first cycle, done all the injections and then had the 2 week wait. We had to wait for the positive test. That's probably the longest 2 weeks. And she done the test and it come back negative. And we just thought, how can that be? We've just gone through the professionals have done what they're meant to do and we've gone through everything, like the test that's saying it should be fine. And naively, we just thought, why hasn't it worked? And done another test and still negative. And again, it's only then when you start looking into it that you realise actually it's not, a lot of people assume that I'm going to do IVF, it's the answer to our prayers kind of thing. It's not at all, as many people know. And I think that was the first sort of reality check that actually, look, this ain't the answer. We need to look into what's going on here.
And I think that's a very common assumption, especially more like for people who haven't been through IVF, who just assume it equals baby. But perhaps to rewind a little bit, so you obviously you managed to get pregnant naturally twice. What was behind the decision to start seeking fertility treatment?
I think, like I say, it was just time was against us, really. And Sean, I think, we kept trying and Becca was doing all the ovulation tests. So we was trying to make sure we're getting everything spot on and lining up as well as doing it. Actually, it almost become, not going to say a chore, but it almost become a job. It was that desperate. So every time the ovulation window fell, it's like, coming, this is a week. And like I say, after a while, when it didn't happen. And also, I think as well, because of the operation and having to remove one of the tubes, the fallopian tubes, they did say to us that we're 50% getting less eggs because obviously the ovaries are ovulating from one side. And obviously with the tube removed, we're almost lost 50% of the chance, if you like, because it's only getting one side. So I think that was the other decision that made us go down the IVF route, because if we go down the IVF route, they can collect eggs from both ovaries, if you like. So again, it's going to speed up the process, if you like, or give us more chance, because we felt if we was carried on doing it in a natural way, because she'd only got one tube, it's 50% less successful. So that's another reason what we thought IVF, and collect all the eggs that we can, fertilise everything, hunky-dory, should be fine. So I think that was partly as well because of what she'd gone through and the operation that she'd gone under to have her tube removed. That was partly the reason why we decided to go down that route as well.
Yeah, understandable. And it's a bit of a, I was trying to think of a different word, but it's a mindfuck, isn't it? When you go through all this and you've been through all that shit and you just want to get, and you just want that family, that child, and you are in good company here, and anyone listening will completely get it when you mention about sex becoming a chore.
Yeah.
Like on demand, but we had a sex therapist come on, actually. We delved into it at length. This is years down the line now since you started trying, since you got back from that holiday in Mexico. And
So
the time just goes on and on, doesn't it? That waiting is just awful.
Yeah, and I think that's what it is. We're just so desperate to want a family. And like I say, because time's against us, like I say, at the time, I was 41 and Becca was 36, which I know in well, is no age really, but I think consciously we're thinking, oh, look, we're getting older, chances are diminishing, so we need to look at that next step to speed it up. And I think, again, that was the old idea of IVF. You just think the experts know what they're doing. Everybody's science is going to do its job. They're going to pick the best egg and the best sperm. And what can go wrong? How can it fail, if you like? And that, I think that was where we were that naive on that first round of thinking, oh, yeah, we're just, it's almost the egg. The experts are doing what they do. Technology's come on leaps and bounds. So why shouldn't it work?
This series is all about reminding you that when it comes to fertility, you're not on your own. At the Male Fertility Podcast, we know how powerful the right support can be, which is why we've partnered with Fertility Family to share Imperil. We all know that nutrition matters when it comes to fertility, but let's be honest, maintaining a perfectly balanced diet for conception is incredibly hard. Choosing a supplement can be just as confusing, especially when many multivitamins contain strong antioxidants that can actually harm sperm quality. Imperil is different. It's made from activated micronutrients that support every cell in the body, from the largest, the egg, to the smallest, the sperm. These nutrients have been clinically shown to significantly improve live birth rates in men and women who have previously been struggling to conceive. Imperil is different. It's made using activated micronutrients that support every cell in the body, from the largest, the egg, to the smallest, the sperm. These nutrients have been clinically shown to significantly improve live birth rates in men and women who have previously struggled to conceive. What we like is that behind the science at Fertility Family are real stories from real people. To find out more, visit www.fertilityfamily.co.uk. And if you decide it's right for you, our listeners get 10% off using the code MFPOD10. That's MFPOD10. Now, back to the episode. I'm interested to know what that initial conversation with the clinic was like, because obviously you're turning up having, obviously, what's happened to you, but you've also had two natural conceptions. Did they mention anything about success rates or anything like that in terms of age or just in general? Or was it just, yeah, we can do this and let's roll with it?
Yeah, I think a lot of it was when we was first having that consultations with them. I think it was they were giving that sense of hope that, yeah, look, we'll do this. We'll start off on this measurement of injections and doing this amount to start with. And because you've got this and because you've got that, they were very giving us that confidence that it was all going to go fine. They didn't really put any doubt into us why it shouldn't. And I think, yeah, because of age, we were made aware that obviously it is only about 40% successful. And as you get older, that gets a bit less as well. But generally, there was, yeah, no reason why it shouldn't work. They were telling us you can do these add-ons and you can buy all these extras and the glue and the incubator thing. So at the time, we were like, yeah, we'll sign us up to that. I think even as well at the time, the first round, Becca went through some fertility acupuncture, which was recommended. We paid for some extra bits with the clinic and that everything should be all lining up and should be successful. But yeah, as experience has taught us, it's not the case.
No, and you mentioned the famous add-ons there. That's a completely different conversation. But yeah, you've been... All the signs are pointing towards that it should be relatively straightforward, shouldn't it? But it's never just straightforward. So that cycle wasn't successful. And then you moved on to the next one. How did that entail? And you also, you met a guy who has had both mine and Sean's balls in his hand, Mr. Oliver Wiseman.
Yeah. the great Isle of Wight.
And you've also spoken to, Jackie Stewart has spoken to me and Sean. So
obviously
this is where we start to hit familiar ground. Explain what happens next, because this is where the story changes a little bit, doesn't it, in terms of the male factor side of things.
Yeah, so we had the second round. Again, we wanted to get jumped back on the horse, as you like. So we got Christmas out of the way. We felt like we'd given it enough time from the first one for Becca's body to recover from all the medicines, and that gave the second round another go. Again, this time it was IVF again. We paid for a few bits and pieces that we thought would help it. Again, exactly the same result. 2 weeks waiting for that test result, negative, no reason why, no other explanation. And then the third round was in November of 24. And that one was probably our biggest hope. We'd had the best graded egg. We'd had an A-plus egg graded. Had two transfers. We had real big hopes on this one. Thinking third time lucky, as you like, we could be there. Get really excited. And then, yeah, that two-week test come. And I remember at the time I was at work, and I said to Becca, I said, look, don't do it until I need to be with you. But Becca being Becca, she couldn't wait. And I remember, and I was somehow trying, I wish I'd never gone to work, but I remember being at work and all I could think about was, has she done the test? Has she done the test? And I rang her up and I said, all right. I said, have you done it? And she straight away started crying. She went, yeah, I have. And I knew from, I could just hear from her voice that it wasn't the news we wanted. And I think that was when it really hit me that this is tough. And I just felt like, it's when I just thought, what the fuck is going on? We've gone for all the sort of normal tests that you get offered. Why is it not working? There's nothing wrong. And I know it sounds so stupid because there's so many people in worse situations. But it's just like, why is it not working? And I just remember that feeling of anger and frustration. And that was probably when I say it was really, it really knocked me. That feeling of despair and anger and frustration and wanting to know the reason why, you know, looking for answers and someone to blame. And I remember thinking, it's the clinic, they've done it wrong and things like that. And yeah, just that real anger and depression and things like that just got me down thinking, this, why is it not working for us? And I think that went on for quite a while. And yeah, I remember just some days just driving to work and I was just, before I knew it, I was just bursting into tears and getting short with people and then not wanting to be around other people with kids and then also what we found as well with family and that, like Becca's sisters, when they were, fell pregnant, they didn't want to tell us that they were pregnant, or they would get upset when they was telling us they got pregnant. And like our good friends had been trying for a while and they fell pregnant. And again, they was, found it hard to tell us. And I remember even when they told us, a big part of me, it sounds really terrible, but it was almost like resentment, as if to say, like, why have they got pregnant? And I was happy for them because they're our closest friends. But at the same time, that I remember when I first found out, me and Becca just both cried because, again, we thought, why not us? Why can't we have that?
Again, it's one of the things that anyone listening to this, going through it, will know exactly what you're talking about. It's hard to explain. It's like that mix of, like you said, the happiness, joy, but like jealousy, resentment, and the feeling of like unjust is all swirling around. And yeah, it's, unless you really felt it, you'd never know what that feels like, that real, like when it's swirling around in your gut. And so I just want to say, mate, also thank you for opening up and sharing how you were feeling at the time. Like you mentioned that, the anger, but also like breaking down on the way to work, because there's too much nonsense around about men don't express any emotions. Not just that, but that men aren't as desperate to have families and stuff like that. I see this stuff probably because of my algorithms and that. And I'm like, I don't know who they're talking to, because it's not the blokes I speak to. They're just desperate and they feel it just as much, just like you have. And the way you beautifully have described it, all the pain like that you've been through, it shows that you felt it every step of the way.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Because people would say, like, it'll work out. You'll big parents. And I think they don't understand what it's like, what you're going through. They almost want to say what they think you want to hear, kind of thing. And that, I know they've all got our best interests at heart, their family, but it's without, like you say, knowing what you're going through, it's hard to really understand it. And I think that's one of my the other point when I thought this is where I need to find some help in this, and was we was at, again, a family gathering, and there was all the, like, we got seven nieces and nephews between us now, and they're all great kids. They range from everything between 1 and 9. And I remember we was at one gathering, and we were sitting there, and me and Becca were just sitting at the table, and all the parents were just playing around with the kids, and we just, I mean, well, because we don't want to interact with them, but I remember that moment of sitting there and looking over at Becca and just seeing her looking, and all of a sudden, again, the grief just hit me, and I just had to take myself off and found myself crying my eyes out. And she'd come out and said, "What's the matter?" And I said, "This is what I'm finding tough. This, like, seeing you, we feel like we're separate because we haven't got that part of the family. We haven't got the kids that we're sitting and engaging with, and we haven't got our own ones to do it with. We know we're doing it with our own nieces and nephews. We haven't got our own ones to do that." And that's when I said, "Look, I'm going to need to, I need to speak to someone and try and understand, to try, I can't carry on feeling like this all the time." I got in touch with the counsellor and went and see a counsellor to start off with, and had a few sessions with her, and she helped me understand what it was I was going through. She said it's the grief, and I never even thought of it in that term, in that way of an emotion, but she said it's grief you're going through. And so she was able to then give me some exercises to try and cope with that grief feeling. She said, when you do get those emotions coming on, try this exercise. And she told me one thing on YouTube, which is leaves in a river. You listen to it, and it's a sort of, you put your thoughts in on a leaf and let it float down the river and let it go by. So she helped me understand the grief side of it, how to deal with that. But again, it wasn't that talking to someone who knows what you're going through. Going back to Bourne, they offered us free counselling sessions. So again, I thought, you know what, I'm going to sign up to this, because I felt like the first counsellor, she was great, but again, with the one that the clinic offers, I felt like I might have been in a group with people that are going through similar things and understanding. And that's when I then first got into contact with the amazing Jackie Stewart, joined her sessions, and there was, again, other couples, other people in a similar sort of situation going through the struggles with the IVF. And that completely changed it, to be able to listen to other people and to relate to them. It helped me a lot to understand what I was going through, because I was then, we was talking amongst ourselves in this group, and Jackie was just incredible. She really was absolutely incredible, the way she can help with things. And she was actually the one that put me onto you guys. She said, "Look, there's this podcast, this is great, two guys, it's really worth a listen." And that's what put me on to you guys. And again, started from the very first episode. And I remember listening to your guys' story and just being in tears then. But then listening through every episode and laughing at other stories of the sample experience. Wanxiety, as you call it. And then, yeah.
Oh, you've just validated Kieran, I think. He wants to get a t-shirt with that on.
I want a t-shirt with Wanxiety on.
I'd love to wear that around to see people's faces, to try and understand.
I'm going to wear it to the gym, like a big muscly griller, Wanxiety on it.
That's honestly, when I heard that expression, that really did crack me up. I thought, yes, I can totally relate. Because it is, you do get that anxiety when you go into them rooms and things where you've got to do, the pressure's on. But yeah, like I say, that's when I got in contact with you guys and reached out to you. And it's just, you guys have just been amazing. And since joining the Nexus community and realising that I'm not the only one in this situation, and it may not be completely male fertility related, but again, since the last IVF, we thought we need to start investigating in deeper. So that's when we did start going down the route of sperm fragmentation and things like that. And that's what come back as slightly off what it should be. So it was something like I had 32%, whereas they say unassisted, it should be under 20. Assisted fertility should be under 30. So all of a sudden, that's made me realise, there we go. That's the reason why it hasn't worked. So that's what then made me think, right, I need to, in my head, I'm thinking, this is all it's got to be in, because all the other tests here, like I say, I went after seeing Dr. Wiseman and he said, yep, there's no issue here from what I can see. So another tick off the box, that's that test been done. And the other ticks we had done, all of a sudden I've now got this sperm frag to focus on as what could be the cause. So yeah, it was March this year. We went away to Australia back in February, which was basically after the last failed round of IVF last year. We just thought, do you know what? We need a fuck it holiday, something to cheer ourselves up. because I said to Becca at the time, if this one doesn't work, yeah, we need a fuck it on this. So we were fortunate enough that we was able to book Australia and just go bollocks to it. We just had to cheer ourselves up to focus on. So that was our fuck it holiday after the third failed round. And we said, right, as soon as we come back from that, we're going to focus on lifestyle changes and getting this sperm frag test improved, and hopefully things should start improving. So yeah, March, got back beginning of March, again, cut out all the booze and everything like that. We reached out to a fertility detective on Instagram that recommended some supplements for me to try, because all of a sudden now it's changed. It's not now focusing on what's wrong with Becca. It's now looking at what could potentially the male side, what could be my issues. And all of a sudden, that's what then makes you realise, but yeah, it's not always the woman that's at fault. We always think, oh, us men, we've only got to do one thing, a bit of sperm and that's it. But all of a sudden, now understanding what the sperm frag is and where it is, now realising that actually, yeah, it's a male issue as well. So that's when, yeah, as of March, I cut out all the booze and started taking all of these supplements. And I'm trying to do that for about a year and then hopefully going to go and have another test. Because they say you need to give it between 6 months and a year to really notice if it's made a difference to the sperm fragmentation. So I'm hoping in a new year, I'm going to book another appointment to try and see if there's been improvements made. But yeah.
And that's the thing as well, is that it's a test that does have to be repeated, and it's not cheap to do. So it's one of those things that you've followed the right path, I think, in trying everything first and then delving deeper, because it is that thing. It's like below the surface.
Yeah.
But I want to come back to something you said, that it's not strictly male factor or whatever. You're a male and you're going through fertility issues. You are very much welcome here. You belong here. You belong in the community. Yeah. And that's like important for anyone to hear, because it's not like a race to the bottom, like of who's got the shit of sperm or any or whatever. Having that sadness follow you around like a dark cloud right through to the sex on demand and the pressures that come with that. Every bloke is going through this, and that's why it doesn't matter what brings you here.
Yeah.
That's the importance of this community, because we all get it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I was worried about. I was worried about, yeah, like you say, do I fit in this group? I know it's a male fertility group, and that's why I thought, do I belong? Because again, I've not got any obvious no issues apart from this sperm frag thing. And am I doing the right thing by offering my story to you guys? Is it going to be acceptable? But like you say, yeah, it's still part of that same feeling that we all want the same goal. We all want to become parents and we all want to have children. And it's that going through that journey, as we go back to going through that process of the emotions. And also I think because of what actually happened to us personally, like with the ruptured ectopic, they say that ectopics are a common thing, but they generally get picked up before they rupture. And they say ruptures are so rare and so life-threatening. And I suppose that's one of the other things I love telling, not so love telling people their stories, but there's so many people that are not aware of what even an ectopic is. I'm not saying I never knew. And that's why another reason why I wanted to maybe share the story with you guys, because, yeah, to get it out there, to show people that, like I say, being pregnant isn't a safe and isn't always a given thing and a plain sailing thing, even from right from the very start, something like that can go drastically wrong. And that's what I just wanted to share with everyone, to say, look, this is what happened to us. And as of yet, we're still in the same boat now. We're still persevering and trying. And yeah.
It's a mark of your character and Becca's character, your resilience, your strength as individuals and as couples. But you are still here. You're pushing on and you're still in the race. And you're just here. You're turning up. You're not avoiding it. You're not burying your head in the sand. And like you've said, at the moment, there's no end in sight for you. And so you're here talking about this now. That shows remarkable strength of character.
Yeah. You most definitely belong here, mate. And your story is a very valid one to be heard on this podcast. You've spoken about something there that is so important, and that's just raising awareness of fertility issues, whether it's male or female. It needs to be spoken about more.
And like you said, ectopic pregnancies as well, raising awareness of that, because... Yeah. It isn't spoken about.
It's not spoken about. And there will be guys that at some point, a guy's going to listen to this because of the algorithms of the world, because they're going through the same thing and they're going to relate to it. And that's the important bit. There's someone out there that needs to hear your story. There's more than one. There's thousands that need to hear it.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
But it's just not talked about. And that, especially the male side of it, there's things that have happened to Jen that have affected me. But we don't talk about them openly. As men, we just shut up and look after primary care. And that is my wife in that sense, her primary target. I've forgotten what they call it. There's a name for it, isn't it? But looking after the one you truly love. And you almost sacrifice yourself. So we're so thankful that you've come on and shared this, mate. What does the future look like?
Certainly get this test put in to see where we are with the percentages for the sperm fragmentation. The latest one, we're now looking at maybe going down the NHS route, because again, it's been 2 years and we've had unsuccessful pregnancy. So Becca has had appointments with the GP and we're just waiting to be referred. We're eligible and we're just waiting to be referred. So I think, again, in a new year, we're going to follow up on that and potentially go down that route. Again, if nothing happens naturally in between, but as of yet, nothing has. So I think that's where our next step's going to be, in trying to see what the route of the NHS is like and continuing that journey. Because at the end of the day, we're not going to give up on it. Whatever it takes, we're gonna go there. We've spoken about every option's on the table. We've spoken about donor sperm and things like that, because we're that desperate to become parents. We've got that much love to give. It's obvious when we've got our nieces and nephews around us. For some people say that they're almost like our sitting children. When we're babysitting them, we treat them like they're our own kids, which naturally everyone does. But I think we've actually feel more connected to being a parent. That's the closest we get to being a parent when we've got our nieces and nephews around. So to us, we've got so much love to give and desperate to come, but we're not going to give up on this. We're just going to keep at it until we get there eventually. We just can't give up.
Yeah. We wish you all the best of luck, mate. And obviously, keep us updated, and we're here to support you every step of the way, as best we can. Let us know what you need and we'll deliver it and make sure
you guys have genuinely been amazing. You really have. Honestly, the work you guys are doing is just incredible. It's one of the best things that Jackie ever did, was recommending me to you guys. And since meeting you guys and getting to know you and then being invited to join the Nexus group, it's just unbelievable what you guys are doing, and it really has made a difference. It's got me through some downtimes and things like that, and being part of the Nexus group and the community and seeing the support that's there is just unbelievable. And knowing that everyone's there, that everyone's got each other's backs, it's incredible work. It's an amazing community, and just may it continue.
Oh, thanks, mate. Honestly, that it's stuff like that keeps us going. And this is what the podcast is all about, sharing knowledge and little tidbits and things that could help others and give them that tool. So you've already mentioned the leaves in the stream, or if there's anything else that you learned from that helped you cope, that
pass on. Another useful one again, because when I told her about me breaking down on my way to work and stuff, she said, well, look, again, if you're in that situation and you feel those emotions coming on, just focus on the radio, focus on a song, and just start singing the lines on the song, whatever it may be, or change the station to a song you like and just start singing that song. She said it's about taking that attention away from your thoughts and focusing on something like that. So even that was amazing. Again, when I was driving along and I was in my thoughts in my head and I felt again building up, I would all of a sudden go, let's change the station, let's put the station, or I would just start singing the song, whatever song it would be. I would just start singing, and I haven't got a singing voice at all. But it was just that taking me thought away and focusing on something as simple as that, or focusing on a task. And she said, if you're not in the van, just go, what are we going to do for dinner? What am I going to do? What am I going to get from shopping? What do I need from shopping? I need apples, I need and all this. It's just trying to change that focus. And when you know that it's coming in, she said as well, with the anger side of it, or that sort of side, she said, if you've got something in your hand, she said, literally just pass it from one side of your hand to the other, so from your left hand to your right hand, from your right hand to your left, and just keep doing that. And she said, subconsciously, that would change your head thinking and things like that. So it sounds weird at the time. You just think, not really. But when you actually give it a go, when you're in that moment, it really did make a difference. And like I say, she certainly helped me understand and control that grief side of it. I haven't had that as much. And when I do, I'll relate back to these exercises, recommend giving them a go.
I think that's amazing advice, man. So thank you so much.
And you're very welcome. Thank you, guys.
Thanks for listening. If this episode has helped you, do us a quick favour and leave us a review. You don't even have to use your real name. Every single review helps another man find this show when he needs it the most. It's honestly the best way you can help the next guy. If you've got a question or something you'd like us to talk about in the mailbag, please drop us an email at themalefertilitypodcast@gmail.com. We read every message that comes through. And if you'd like a bit more guidance and support from other men on the same journey as you, you're welcome to join our free private community at nexusfertility.com. It's totally confidential and designed just for you by men who get it. For the latest updates, follow us on social media at Male Fertility Podcast. Remember, you're not alone.